Welcome to Elton and John's La Liga Weekly. Remember when the Boo Boys were slaughtering Gareth Bale? Get out! You're useless! I drive him to the airport myself! It would be best for everyone if you left tomorrow. And that's just a manager. Well, it turns out there's a fair amount of relief at Real Madrid that the Welshman defied what is basically an ungovernable club. He rescued them at Villarreal, but also had the decency to allow Zidane to feel okay about having been so keen to throw him out by getting himself stupidly sent off. So, all in all, Barca's point at Osasuna wasn't a bad one. Oh, watch out, incoming! Yes, they drew 2-2. Well played, fat boy, and no, I don't mean Sergio Ballesteros. There's a reference for the old boys. So it's Atleti who lead the way with 9 points from 3 games, the same as Real Madrid and Barcelona combined, by the way. It looks as though we've got a title race, so get those TV rights sold. Athletic are second after the Basque derby, in which we learned that Iñaki Williams can score goals but can't do a knee slide. A Sevilla third, although we'll see how they fare when they kick off a Europa League group that involve games in Russia, Tahiti and Venus. Of course, Monday night is the end of the transfer window in La Liga, and who won't miss the Neymar saga? How fascinating it has proved to be every single step of the way. Transfer speculation is so much better than when they start kicking the ball around. Who wants to see that? Ah, good evening, Terry. Well done on your game tonight. Just before we get into the analysis, we had better just pause and slow down a second and offer our condolences to Luis Enrique and his family on the death of their daughter, Zana. She's just 9. There's nothing useful that we can say, of course, by comparison to that. Everything else is stupid clowning around, isn't it? So, you know, spend time with your loved ones and tell them that you love them and all of that. And right, we will get on with the football, shall we? So you're hot foot from having commentated on a terrifically entertaining, at times shambolic, but you know, a terrifically fun game. Yet another 2-2 draw between Villarreal and Real Madrid, and grabbing centre stage, as I was referencing there, Terry, in the introduction, a man that they were desperate to get rid of, and he is Gareth Bale. The man with all of the headlines, 2 goals and a red card.
It's kind of what we usually see from Real Madrid, isn't it? We've seen Real Madrid pre-season try 4-3-3. Then they had a spell trying 3-5-2 after they got beat by Atletico Madrid. And in the third game of the season, we're now seeing a version of 4-4-2. So it kind of beggars belief that with all the preparation that's gone into the new season, with bringing new players into the squad, spending 300 million euros, that we're still seeing them chopping and changing formations. And thankfully for Gareth Bale, I think it's 6 players who are injured that could play in his position. And it's quite ironic, isn't it, that they've got all these injuries and the one player that's fit, remains fit, surprisingly enough, on this occasion, is Gareth Bale. And it's kind of, Zidane has had no option but to pick him. I mean, the options tonight, if he didn't play Gareth Bale, would have been Vinicius, would have been on the bench. He could have played. But it's a safer bet to go with Gareth Bale. I think the listeners of this podcast know that we both agree that he's still a class player and still worthy of playing in Real Madrid's team if he's still at the club. I'm thankful that we're not seeing any ridiculous. It's hypothetical because we don't know if it would have happened if Asensio, Hazard, Brahim Diaz, Rodrigo, James Rodriguez, Isco had all been fit. Whether Bale would have started, we don't know. But there was an indication that he was going to be, you know, stuck on the bench at best. We joked that we'd be seeing pictures of him sitting in the stands, you know, sending text messages on his phone. But he's been thrust into action. He's played well in the first 2 games and had a spectacular game tonight in terms of all-round action.
Ahmed got in touch and asked me a good question. So does he drop him when Hazard's fit? Or he can't, can he? I mean, Lucas Vazquez was in there, wasn't he? Young Lucas Vazquez. So you've got to find, surely. You've got to find a way for him in the team.
Yeah, young Lucas Vazquez, I love that. He's a year younger than Toni Kroos, who's 29. but we still call him and Nacho, who's 29, the young Real Madrid players, or some people do. Can he drop him? He can drop him. The stupidity of getting the 2 yellow cards late in the game means he's going to be suspended for the Levante match, which might mean the return for Hazard. the place is vacant now. Gareth Bale will be suspended if Hazard's fit. I believe he's been called up by Belgium to go on international duty. I've no idea if he's going to play or not. But it does leave an opening for Hazard. If Hazard comes in and scores a couple of goals against Levante at home, Jovic keeps his place, possibly Benzema. Foolishly, it does give Zidane an option now to, you know, if Real Madrid do beat Levante, to, you know, keep a winning team unchanged and not bring Gareth Bale back in. But what he has done in the first three games, he's played well. He's made a goal. He's scored two against Villarreal, has sort of put him back into. Surely he can't be just left out and, you know, binned off and sat on the bench or sitting in the stand anymore. He's going to still be an influential player for Real Madrid this season.
And it's interesting, isn't it? I wonder whether any Premier League clubs will now look at how he started the season and consider that they missed out, because they all could have had him, couldn't they? If they paid, it wouldn't have been a vast amount. I know his wages were huge, but, you know, Real Madrid were definitely looking, were keen to sell, and almost sold him to China. So, you know, he's a miss, isn't he, Gareth Bale, for the Premier League clubs?
Yeah, and we said that all along, that he still had plenty to offer. I think all the Real Madrid players last season underachieved. I don't think he was any worse than the others. And, you know, I didn't think for one minute that he was a spent force, and we'd seen the best of Gareth Bale. It's possible we've seen the very best of Gareth Bale, but at the age of 30, I still think there's plenty left in the tank. I still find frustrating is the wrong word, but I still see a Gareth Bale that's not playing happy. Mm. You know, even in the games, the way he celebrated his goals, the petulance that was shown at the end, not so much for the second one, but the first yellow card. It doesn't strike me as a happy player at the moment, despite the fact he's getting games. And it's understandable. You're playing for a manager that clearly didn't want you. He's only using you at the moment because he's forced to. But his performances have been solid enough to determine that he should be, you know, very much in the main squad of Real Madrid and, you know, still, you know, an important player for them.
And one other thing that occurs to me on Bale before we move on to one or two other things about Real Madrid is the pre-season thing, because he was left out of quite a lot of the pre-season, wasn't it? And it just makes me wonder about these crazy pre-seasons that the big clubs in particular are having, where they're flying here, there and everywhere. They're playing in competitions around the world. And then you look early in the season, how many injured players there are. You know, late August, early September. And I just wonder whether Bale's benefiting from having been binned off in pre-season.
Yep, he missed a few of the journeys abroad. It's a big bone of contention with me that the big clubs feel the need to go and play all around the world, sacrifice any real preparation for a league campaign, cup campaign, the big clubs 60 games a season at the least. I cannot believe, you know, I understand the reasons behind the clubs doing it in terms of marketing, and they obviously make money from going on these trips and these tours. But there can't be anything better in terms of marketing if you win your league, you're prepared properly, you avoid injuries throughout the season, you're willing to spend, in Real Madrid's case, £300 million on new players, and yet risk having them, you know, breaking down in the early stages of the season. Real Madrid, I don't think, can be any bigger in terms of, you know, a club and being global. They are global. Barcelona are global. All the big clubs around Europe are global. And when they're playing in these international tournaments at the end of the season, and they seem to be, they're every year now, every summer, we have some form of summer football that leads to players like Sadio Mane having 2 weeks off between playing in African Cup of Nations and playing in the European Super Cup. So it's bizarre. And is it going to change? Probably not. It's the one opportunity, genuine opportunity that the clubs have, the suits have at the clubs to market their clubs around the world, to try and gain new followers on social media, to earn a few quid from playing in. But that the money they must make on those summer tours, pre-season tours, must pale into insignificance when the actual money that, you know, these big clubs in terms of revenue throughout a season. So I wonder who's going to be the first club to, you know, make a stand and go back to a traditional pre-season where you're probably looking at 2-3 weeks, 20, 21 days preparation before you even played a game, if you really genuinely wanted to get your team fit for a campaign. Then you go into matches that probably you would win comfortably, build up a bit of confidence, basic match fitness, and then eventually get a little bit tougher during the pre-season and then finish off with a genuine competitive friendly match before the league campaign kicks off. But it isn't the case now. They're going here, there and everywhere and literally having days to prepare. Barcelona were in America a week before the season started, playing a couple of games with players missing, flying back and then facing Athletic Bilbao on a Friday night with barely any preparation at all. Suarez gets injured. Messi is already injured. Dembele picks up an injury. You've got the list of injuries at Real Madrid. It's self-explanatory why the big clubs, particularly in La Liga, are picking up these injuries.
Two more questions on Real Madrid. So soon, I think you pronounce it, sorry if I'm wrong, Real Madrid will announce one or two more signings. Otherwise, we are in the, and then I'll say Maya because I don't want to get the red tick. Is the transfer business done? I mean, it's by the time people listen to this, they might already know the answer to this. So let's make it a short one. But if you were in charge of Real Madrid, would you still add another signing in at the last minute?
I'm surprised it's this late now. If they do, I see it as a panic signing because of the results, the last couple of results. But I think if you were running your club properly, then you would have given up on the Pogba thing when the Premier League transfer window closed. You would have had another target already lined up, an option, and they haven't made that. They've now, you know, with three league games in, and to do it with, you know, in the last day of the transfer window, it shouldn't be that way. Would it surprise me if they do a transfer? It wouldn't surprise me. But I don't think it's the right way to go about business.
I watched the North London derby early, Terry, and Arsenal got a really good midfielder. Real Madrid should go and have a look at him. Danny Ceballos, really good player. Anyway.
I know. And Kovacic is showing form at Chelsea.
Who needs talented young midfielders?
Exactly. They're the two obvious ones. And, of course, Marcus Llorente made an error for one of the Eibar goals. But he's still capable. So, as we said previously, Fede Valverde is the only other option. Tonight they go with two. Modric is on the bench. It's not ideal. In an ideal world for Real Madrid, they would have another player that would come in that would be on a level in terms of ability with Kroos and Modric and Casemiro. So that when they do swap things about, the team doesn't weaken. If you change Modric, Kroos, Casemiro for Fede Valverde, I think at this stage of Valverde's career, it's not the same level.
JR, last question on Real Madrid. JR, how good was Ferland Mendy tonight? He liked the look of the new left-back for Real Madrid.
No, I did. It was interesting seeing him play up against the player who was in Chukwueze's athletic, pacey, hard-working. He had more, and he dealt with him admirably. I thought he looked really good defensively. And he struggled a little bit when Moy Gomez went there and was a totally different proposition in terms of positional play for Moy Gomez was slightly different. Moy Gomez actually used skill instead of athleticism to try and get past him. And I think, in fairness, Moy Gomez probably had the better of him. But I think all round, I would go 8 out of 10 on his debut. I thought he looked really solid, had the opportunities to go forward when VRL changed tactics and he went forward with a good impact. So I know I thought that looked to be a solid signing for Real Madrid.
They paid 1.3 million to get Moy Gomez back via Real. It's not a bad bit of business, is it? But they have, here's a stat, they've led 7 times this season via Real and have got 2 points so far. So, yes, they've got a long way to go, haven't they? Shall we move on? Shall we go to another 2-2 draw? Is it a useful away point or not for Barcelona? So they conceded a terrific volley by Roberto Torres. They improved after the break. Your boy Fati got a goal, didn't he? The 16-year-old, youngest ever Barcelona goal scorer And then Arturo scored a good goal, but then Torres with a penalty late on. A real sort of lack of control over this game for Barcelona. But
yep,
how far do we want to go with it?
Well, I'm looking at the... Again, I'm... Sound of being boring, risk of being boring. These three games that these La Liga clubs have after the, I would call them reckless pre-season preparations that they have. Then they have the three league games and then an international break for 2 weeks. And if you can come through unscathed, you've done okay. The managers are scrambling around. They don't know who's fit. They don't know really, deep down, they don't know who's fit for a new campaign, new season. And in the past, Barcelona have come through unscathed, but defeat against Athletic Bilbao, draw against newly promoted Osasuna away, so both away games they've struggled in. All three games they've had so far, they've struggled in the first 45 minutes. So I think that might give us that they're either being complacent or not confident in the fact that they can go a whole 90 minutes. So therefore, they'll try and ease into a game. And you know, they were poor against Athletic Bilbao in the first half. They weren't behind. That were obviously the late winner, but they weren't good. Against Betis, they went behind and they struggled for the majority of the first half, improved much more in the second half. And I think the same pattern was again at the weekend against Osasuna. Having said that, having been 1-0 behind, Valverde made changes. It's always interesting that when the changes work, is he right for making the changes or wrong for not using those players at the beginning? It's one of those, but the changes worked. Fatty come on, and I didn't know he had that in his locker. We've only seen 20 minutes of him so far, but he did appear to be, to me, to be a player that was going to climb head and shoulders above a central defender and thump one in from 12 yards from the penalty spot with his head. So that was a pleasant surprise. Arturo comes on and scores a goal as well. I thought then when Arturo scores, they go 2-1 up. They actually, for 20 minutes at the start of the second half, they were fantastic, brilliant. And then, you know, do we criticise Barcelona or do we give Osasuna credit for the spirit, their belief that they could get back into the game and get back on level terms? They do get a penalty. In my opinion, it's a penalty when Piqué puts his arms up that high. And, you know, it was when you think that Osasuna's strength last year was their home record, unbeaten all season. I think they only drew two games, won the rest, and they've started off in similar fashion this year, you know, undefeated in their first two games. Both draws, but one of those coming from behind to draw Barcelona. So what I'm pleased with is it's not just this game, it's not just the Real Madrid game this week against Villarreal or the game against Valladolid. It's the fact that I'm not actually seeing at the moment, after three games, still early, I'm not seeing obvious poor teams, which you can sometimes, we could sometimes sniff out, oh, they're going to struggle. Most of the teams look competitive this year. So the fact that Osasuna, Valladolid are picking up points against Barcelona and Real Madrid, you know, lends itself to what we hope will be competitive at both ends of the table this season.
A little point from Shane. According to the Barca bots, he says, this is the worst team in the club's history. They obviously never lived in the post-Cruyff, pre-Rijkaard years. To the point that, you know, the season the Barca finished sixth. Top scorer was Patrick Kluivert with 16 goals.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there's been worse. I get the frustration that, you know, how important the, you know, the results are to if you're a supporter of Barcelona and Real Madrid, but it's early. Please, it's three games in. No need to panic yet. I talked about coming through unscathed. It's not ideal for Barcelona and Real Madrid to have dropped points, but there are 35 games to go, so there's no need for panic yet. I was going to say that. Messi, Suarez, Dembele straight away to return. It looks like Rakitic is going to return as well. Or is he going to go somewhere? We're waiting to see what happens on Monday. But no, I'm slightly surprised that Nelson Semedo appeared to be nailed on as right back again and then substituted after half a game to make an attacking change and then putting Sergio Roberto back at right back. So I thought we'd seen the last, unless it was an emergency, of Sergio Roberto playing right back. So I understand the frustrations with Valverde, but let's be fair. When you've got, you know, Messi, Suarez, Dembele missing at the moment, Barcelona are going to look different.
Let's take a little break there, Terry. We'll come back and we will talk about the La Liga leaders. So welcome back. Atletico are the only team in La Liga with a 100% record so far, but not exactly bulldozing teams at the moment. It's an entertaining game against Eibar, but they were 2-0 down inside the first 20 minutes. Everybody's new friend, João Felix, got a tap in to make it 2-1. And then the player that falls into the category of like a new signing, Vitolo, with an equaliser. And then the sheer determination of Thomas Partey, he sort of embodies Atletico at the moment, doesn't he? He's got quality, but he's also got the grit. They showed the grit to come through, and it's Atletico leading the way, Terry.
Yeah, and another couple of subs as well. Vitolo and Thomas Partey didn't start the game. Classic Diego Costa for the first goal to run half the length of the pitch and shrug defenders off and put it on a plate for João Felix. I couldn't believe when I saw the scoreline 1-0. Cool. Atletico conceded a goal. Then, lo and behold, next thing you know, it's two. Arbia's got the second. And once Atletico got the first goal back, even though it's Eibar, who always put up a fight, I kind of expected at the very least Atletico to scramble and get the draw. But they, through the skin of their teeth, they have come through unscathed. The first three games after this pre-season, international break coming up. Costa's been missing. Alvaro Morata was injured in this game. And they've got through the three games with three wins, 9 points. And this will just restore a bit of belief to the older players. I say older players, the players that were already there. They're never sure how things are going to turn out when you see, you know, big name players leaving Atletico Madrid. So this will reinforce their belief that under Simeone, with the new players, they have a chance of achieving something this year. And also, likewise, for the new players that are coming to the club to be witnessing the atmosphere for a home game against Eibar, being 2-0 down, coming from behind, not only getting the draw, but going on to get all 3 points, getting a last-minute dramatic winner. That gives everybody that little momentum, that little bit of belief, a two-week break for the international games. And when Atletico come back, they'll be, you know, really boosted confidence-wise that, you know, this year they can seriously challenge at the top, not just look to finish above, you know, in between Barcelona and Real Madrid. This is a healthy advantage. Plenty of games to go, don't get me wrong. But to have the advantage they've got over Barcelona and Real Madrid at this stage is it's a head start. You know, it does, you know, as I say, reinforce that belief that, you know, they can do something this season.
Rafa says he's happy that Sevilla are playing well. Fernando and Jordan strong in midfield. Also, Nolito, Reguilon combo down the left. They badly need a centre forward to suit the style of play. It was a 1-1 draw with Celta Vigo, but they look well organised. Lopetegui's reputation took an absolute hammering, of course, a year ago with what happened with Spain and then Real Madrid. But so far, again, the early signs are good for Sevilla, even if, you know, today or this weekend they drop points.
Yeah, I think striker is the last piece of the jigsaw. It's a weird situation with De Boer, isn't it, where they've signed him in the summer and they're looking to sell him. I think the deal with Javier Hernandez is done. He kind of fits the bill. I think they were trying to get Mariano Diaz, who I think would have been perfect. Dynamic, aggressive, mobile, hold the ball up. Javier Hernandez will give them a cutting edge up front, which has been lacking. It's the only piece in the team that's been lacking. Luke de Jong, it's hard to be critical because he's only just come to the club, but I never felt he was one thing or the other. He's not a big... He's not Fernando Llorente, for instance, or Diego Costa, and he's also not Ben Yedder. So in terms of you haven't got a big striker, target man, powerful presence up front, and you haven't got that quick, pacey striker that can run in behind defenders... He's neither of those. So technically, he looks good. His movement is good. He can't run away from people. He doesn't go around physically, you know, putting himself about, bashing people up. So I think they needed a definitive type of striker, and it was one or the other. So Javier Hernandez will be interesting to see. You know, he's just got to get on the end of the chances. Also found as well, getting slightly technical, which I don't normally do. They played the wide players really wide. And that was the case with Barcelona at the weekend as well. So it's a form of 4-3-3, and I thought both teams were guilty of playing Carlos Perez and Rafinha wide for Barcelona. Likewise, Sevilla did it with Nolito. I've watched so many games, I can't remember who the wide player was. It was in Ocampos this weekend. But they're too wide. So the striker, Griezmann, and Luke de Jong are miles away from anybody. So, and also likewise, when crosses are going into the box in this 4-3-3 formation that Sevilla and Barca were using, that it's easy for defenders to defend against. You know, you're marking, Griezmann's being marked by two, maybe three defenders from Osasuna. Likewise, Celta Vigo had two or three defenders up against De Jong. So it's hard to be critical of the centre-forwards when they're stuck in a system like that.
It was Munir, wasn't it, who started
Munir,
for Sevilla, yep. Wasn't it? Yeah. Right. Okay. That's an interesting. Well, I'm happy for you to get technical. I like that. I like a good bit of detail, Terry, because you know we.
Yeah. It's a hard gig when you're playing up front and no one. You got two wide players and no particular obvious player pushing from midfield, and you do get isolated. Especially if the wide players drop back in and help out in midfield, and you're not even available. If you're not a quick player like Luke de Jong, you're not even much use to the team when it's a counter-attack. So it's not easy when you're playing that role on your own and the wide players. You want more support.
Right, let's talk about the Basta. But there's also the Friday night, two Friday night games at the moment. Who knows how this will all work out, where the fixes will be in the long run. Real Sociedad might point out that the VARs went against them, but I think the VAR... was the crucial calls on the VAR were right, and I think the right team won. I thought there were good goals, and Iñaki Williams obviously on the end of a nice move, and Raul Garcia, some people questioning the goalkeeper. I want to be positive. I want to say, you know, I thought it was a good attempt by Raul Garcia. And Athletic, they're you know, I mentioned well coached for Lopetegui, you could argue that, but Garitano has got Athletic, I mean, he's improved them so much from when he took over.
Incredible. The reason he got the job was because there was a genuine fear, you know, last season, you know, having never been relegated in the history, this was a season that they were in danger. So he's taken them from that. They missed out on European football by the skin of their teeth. Might have been an advantage to him at this stage of his, you know, being in charge at Athletic Bilbao, meaning they've just got a straight run at the league campaign this season. And when they play like that, when that atmosphere for a Basque derby, and they start with the tempo and the aggression that they showed in that first half, that was enough to win the game. From then on, it was a case of just making sure that Real Sociedad never got any sniff of a comeback. So Iñaki Williams, scintillating goal, you know, it was Real Sociedad's defence to knock off and go asleep. But it was you know, a brilliant performance from a team who, this season, are enjoyable to watch, which, for the first half of last season, and possibly the season before, hasn't been the case. Now, at the moment, they're playing good football. Everything is, when they're the faster, the better for Athletic Bilbao, as I say, with the ball, without the ball, closing down, moving the ball quickly. And I thought they were terrific on Friday night. And I thought it was a really good game. And the one or two spells in the second half where, you know, possibility of Real Sociedad creeping back into the game. There was an offside goal, which was the correct decision, eventually by VAR, which could have given Real Sociedad a chance back into the game when Isak had the goal chalked off. But in general, I think it was a really good derby and a tremendous performance from Athletic Bilbao.
Right, so where do we go next? Let's do Betis, shall we? Encouraging performance from them. That things hadn't really gone for them early in the season. So they went behind to a Martin Braithwaite goal for Leganés. But then all the goals were pretty quick, actually, weren't they? Because Laurent Moron equalised pretty quickly. And then Nabil Fekir with his second goal for Betis. More encouraging than, Terry, what you saw from them?
Yeah, I think a bit unlucky, John. The first two games, the early sending off in the first game, 8 minutes in, and they had to make changes down to 10 minutes for too long against Valladolid. Unlucky to be playing Barcelona in Barcelona's first home game of the season. So I think it was an important game for Betis because you don't want that run to continue. You don't want to be, you know, unlucky leads into losing confidence. So an important win, a really good game of football against the run of play. Leganés got the first goal. Loren, given the service, which he didn't get at all last season, given the service, he'll score goals. That's his third of the season. The goal against Barcelona, he ain't going to get many of them a season. But the other goals he's got, they're typical. You know, the tap-ins, the six-yard box, the runs across the near post. That's what he didn't get last season. So it was pleasing to see. It was a cracking atmosphere. I looked at the study. I'm looking at differences between Quique Setién's Betis and Ruby's Betis. They're still dominating possession. They're still dominating in passes, but there is a clear plan to move the ball forward quicker. So I looked at the stats. They're 68-32% possession, 415 passes to 141 at Leganés. They scored two goals. They hit the woodwork three times. That's an end product, which we didn't get under Setién. So they're getting the balance right. They're not going to suddenly change from a team that had 700 passes a game to a team that you know, plays direct football and gets it forward quickly. That would be foolish. So I think that the transition is developing, that they've got good, skillful, technical players. Joaquin was good. Canales was good. Guardado works his socks off. Fakir was different class. Loren Moron is getting amongst the goals. Borja Iglesias to come back on. He was one of those players that hit the woodwork as well. So, no, the signs were good for Betis, and it's a great atmosphere in that stadium. You look at it on television or whatever you're watching it on, Betis are a good watch. So tough on Leganés at the moment, finding life difficult. I think they're the only team, aren't they, without a point? So,
yes.
Tough start for Leganés now.
The most eye-catching result in many ways, obviously taking the two giants dropping points out of it, was Espanyol 0, Granada 3. Now, when we did our pre-season predictions, loads of people were saying Granada would go down. It seems an obvious choice for them to go down. No one could quite decide what to say about Espanyol, because obviously they finished last season really well, but they had the drain of playing in the early rounds of the Europa League, and boy, that seems to have hit them. And that the draw is out for the Europa League. The Spanish teams are all playing, not quite in Venus as I suggested at the beginning, but the air miles that that the Spanish teams are racking are ridiculous in the Europa League, and you've got to worry for Espanyol with this kind of result. Getting hammered at home by Granada, certainly in terms of the scoreline. They were eventually hammered by Granada. You know, 3-0 home defeat is not good.
Yeah, playing on the Thursday night. We saw how pleased the supporters were to get in the competition. So it's a challenge for Espanyol to get through the qualifiers. Their goal was to make the group stages, which they've done. And it kind of felt like on Sunday against Granada that having achieved that, they knocked off a bit in this particular game. This will be a warning that if they're going to, you know, want to do well again in La Liga this season, they're going to have to focus on, you know, back on the group stages. The manager is going to have to start chopping and changing and rotating the team maybe a little bit more. But I think that this was a consequence of them three rounds, six games, added games to get to the group stages. That sort of, I wouldn't say euphoria, but the boost of job done. We're in the group stages and then knocking off against Granada. Granada actually looked like a team that if they get the first goal in the game, they can enjoy playing counter-attacking football. Got plenty of pace when they want to break forward. So I think they thoroughly enjoyed the fact they got an early goal from Puertas. And then from then on, it was just a question of sitting back, soaking up anything that Espanyol wanted to throw at them and constantly looking threatening on the break. So goes with what I said earlier about, you know, the teams, it's a natural conclusion to make to make the newly promoted teams amongst the favourites to go down. Valladolid stayed up last year. Will Mallorca, Granada, Osasuna, you know, be able to do it this year? But that's an excellent result for Granada. Slightly worrying for Espanyol, but lesson learned, I think.
So let's talk about the other two promoted teams. They both lost 2-0, both against the Valencia team. So Mallorca beaten by the two Dani Parejo penalties, Valladolid beaten by Sergio Leon and Jose Morales, late goals for Levante, who started well. But both games, they sort of mirrored themselves, they had similarities, I guess, in that Mallorca and Valladolid both had a number of chances in the game that could easily have turned out differently.
Yeah, Valencia, I think we can count themselves really fortunate. First half, Mallorca, so unlucky. Hit the woodwork on a couple of occasions and were trying to take the game to Valencia, who looked sluggish. Slightly worrying that they're going to have a start to the season, at one stage, approaching the end of the first half before Parejo's first penalty. I was thinking, this might be one of those seasons again for Valencia where they struggle. Everything doesn't sound exactly tickety-boo behind the scenes. So I think that both were penalties, no doubt about that. But Valencia, not at their fluent best yet, managed to get the win, take them up to 4 points. Tough on Mallorca. Valladolid, Levante, talked about substitutes again. Another substitute this week, wasn't it? Sergio Leon with a classic Sergio Leon goal. Morales, and one of the oldies amongst the goal scorers this week, and there was a few of them involved, getting the second. Two home wins for Levante. They're ticking along nicely, but Valladolid are one of those teams that have had three away games so far. They managed to pick up 4 points. They were unlucky in this game. I think it's Valladolid, I think it's Real Sociedad and Eibar, the three teams that going into the international break haven't played a home game yet. So that must be tough on the supporters. When you're waiting all summer, you want to see your team take part in a home match, see new players, and you're having to wait till second half of September to see a home game.
Right, if you want to see the worst goal of the season so far, have a look at the highlights for Getafe versus Alaves, the Hosselu equalising goal for Alaves. Twitter at Driscoll FC, I put the highlights up on there. And also, we do have a Facebook page that I forget to plug, which is La Liga Weekly on Facebook. And again, I just post the highlights, the minute and a half highlights that you're allowed to see for free from La Liga. So they are there. Terry, this week, you're off to Barcelona, aren't you, to talk La Liga with La Liga TV?
Yes, doing a programme on Monday, so leave early Monday morning. Programme Monday afternoon, rounding up the games from the weekend. We're working hard, aren't we, John, to watch as much of the football as we can in a country that doesn't have a TV rights deal at the moment. So hopefully, to find out what's going on, see what's happening in Spain, and most importantly, find out if I can find any news on if we're going to be seeing La Liga back on television and after the three games that we've had with ITV. So hopefully, fingers crossed, something materialises and we can continue to watch hopefully more than just the one game a week at the moment.
Yeah, the one game a week has been good, hasn't it? It's been enjoyable. It's been great hearing you on ITV4. But, that's not enough, is it? We want to see lots of games. We want to see the number of games we were used to. The options are there. People have just got to be sensible about it, haven't they? The broadcasters have got to be aware that it's a good product, that people want to watch it. And whoever's selling the rights on behalf of La Liga has just got to accept that they're not going to get an absolute fortune for them in this situation. But, get them on the telly. Come on, please. And there we are.
What I keep reading is it's a two-team league. It's the easiest cliche to throw at La Liga. It clearly hasn't been true for us some while because there's been three bloody good teams in it. And the fact that Atletico Madrid have been fighting in Champions League finals and winning the Europa League, Sevilla won it three times, should make it, you've got to be it's a bit monotonous to hear that thrown at La Liga. But when you look at this season, when we're seeing Osasuna join with Barcelona, Villarreal join with Real Madrid, Valladolid join with Real Madrid, Athletic Bilbao beating Barcelona, I really genuinely believe this season is going to be the most competitive that we've seen for some while. Now, fingers crossed we don't get a team that runs away with the title like we've had in recent seasons. I don't think that's going to be the case. And I think we're going to be looking at teams. I looked at the list of teams that beat Real Madrid last season prior to doing the Villarreal game against them. And it was Levante, Real Sociedad, home and away, Girona, Rayo Vallecano, Alaves. So I'm hoping that over the last few seasons, there's been a closing up in quality between the big clubs, the smaller clubs, and it is much more competitive. So hopefully, I'm doing my bit selling it. I'm sure no TV executive is listening to our podcast at the moment, but if you are, I guarantee you this is going to be a really good season of La Liga.
Yes, and so say all of us. Right, Terry, enjoy Barcelona, and we will be back podcasting again and hopefully watching as much Spanish football as we possibly can in the next couple of weeks. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.